Well, good morning. We're in week three of our Refresh series, and we thought it would be really important actually to take a look at our use of technology as a church. It affects us so much and in very profound ways, and so we're taking 5 weeks to take a look at that, our relationship with technology. With that in mind, I wanted to just remind you of something really quickly. We have a guidebook that goes along with this series, and so this guidebook is full of discussion questions and resources and just some thoughts on technology to go along with the series. We'd really encourage you to use it, but I also wanted to tell you that this was put together and written mainly by Trevor Sides, by our communication director, and over the years, Trevor has put together a lot of really excellent materials for us. If you remember our Lent devotional last year, or He really heads up a lot of our blog, our podcast. But I wanted to let you know that Trevor is actually transitioning out of his job here, and he's taken another job with a marketing agency in town. And I think it's going to be a great opportunity for him to express his gifts in just a really impactful way. However, we're going to miss him here. And he has really raised the bar in terms of excellence, and he has contributed a lot to our church. And so I just wanted to take a moment to thank him for his work here. So you can... like I said, he's been here for a little over 6 years, almost 7 years, and he's really contributed a lot. So we appreciate you, Trevor, and we're going to miss a lot of your contribution here. But let's get into our series here, and let me begin by reading the verse that we're really basing this series around, the passage. This is Ephesians 5, verses 15 through 21. It says, "Look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time, because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. And do not get drunk with wine, for that is debauchery, but be filled with the Spirit, addressing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody to the Lord with your heart, giving thanks always and for everything to God the Father in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, submitting to one another out of reverence for Christ." So over these 5 weeks, we're taking a look at this passage from different angles, but specifically how it might relate to our relationship with technology. So the first week, we just talked about wisdom in general. This verse calls us to wisdom, that we're to look carefully how we walk, and we are to apply wisdom and make the best use of the time. And so we just tried to set that up to see how we can pursue wisdom in this digital age. Last week, the second week, Travis shared about how technology affects our internal world. And specifically looking at verse 18, which says, "Do not get drunk on wine, for that is debauchery, but be filled with the Spirit." And he painted this vivid picture of how our technological tools can really wrap themselves around our hearts, and in such a way that we almost become, well, we do become enslaved in many cases. And we need to understand that, how it affects us inside. Well, today we are going to take a look at something that I think is implied in verse 19. Now, this passage is really about worship. It's about wisdom. It calls us to wisdom. We're to pursue wisdom in this world, but the end result of wisdom is worship, that we're to praise God, we are to thank Him. But in the middle here of this passage, it says something interesting, that we are to address one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. And what we see here is that our worship is not simply a private, individual thing, but it is a corporate, it's a communal thing. And we see this throughout the Bible, that we are called to worship collectively, that we're pursuing God together, and that our relationships with each other, they are intertwined with our relationship with God. We see this in many places. Maybe one example would be the Lord's Prayer, where Jesus was teaching us how to pray. But think of the pronouns used in the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, lead us not into temptation. Jesus is having us pray together for us. And we see that our, again, our relationship with God is so connected to our relationships with each other. 1 John makes that very clear as well, that we cannot love God if we do not love each other. And so, if we're pursuing praise in this digital age, we need to understand how our technology affects our relationships with each other. Because we need each other in order to seek God and to really worship Him. So we're going to be talking today about our relationships and how we are influenced by technology. Now, it is interesting that over the course of history, I think technology, our technological advancements, and our and relationships with others have had a little bit of a rocky history. Let me give you a quote from Stephen Marchi, this author. He says, "The history of our use of technology is a history of isolation desired and achieved." So often our technologies lead to isolation somehow. Tony Rinke gives an example of that, the example of music. This is what he says about music. "When it comes to music, this technological trajectory is even clearer. Attending a live orchestra performance on a Saturday evening was, for many people, replaced by the stationary phonograph or record player in the family room, which was replaced by a large transistor radio, which was replaced by a portable transistor radio, which was replaced by a boombox with open speakers carried on the shoulder, which was replaced by a Walkman clipped to the belt, which was replaced by a tiny iPod clipped to the sleeve. Music went from a social community experience to a shared family experience to a private earbud experience." And this is the typical trajectory. So often, our technologies lead us to this kind of isolation. They create a world that is very private and very personal. But if we know how important our relationships are, if we look into our Bible and say, God wants us to be together and close, and it's so much of the vehicle for praising Him, then we must take a hard look at our technologies, a critical look at them, and ask, how are they affecting our relationships, and are they leading us to further isolation? Now, our modern technologies, we could say, are a little different, some of the ones that we're very familiar with, because so many of our modern technologies are intended to create social connection. You know, we swim in this sea of social media, and we have all these applications that are intended to connect us. And we have these apps that provide a means of communication in different ways. We have Skype and WhatsApp and WeChat to communicate over video or text or chat. We have applications like YouTube or Pinterest or Reddit that are designed to give us access to information in different ways, but have a very social component to them. There's LinkedIn, which connects us in the workplace. There are a variety of dating applications, and there's probably a spectrum of reputability there. Travis mentioned last week, actually, the most popular one, Tinder. This is the most widely used, although it's probably the one based most on physical appearance, where I can swipe right if I like what I see and left if I don't. In any case, there are lots of these different platforms that are intended to connect us. And this is not even mentioning what I would say are the four that we may be most familiar with in this room. The four that come to mind probably when most of us think of social media, and they are these. Of course, there's Facebook. 2.3 billion of us use Facebook, and we use it quite a bit. And it, of course, gives us this platform to share life and to connect with others. There's Twitter, and each of these has a distinct feature. There's reason it came into popularity. Many of them have evolved from their original state and have added features. But Twitter originally, of course, was intended and still is intended to be an opportunity to communicate in short, concise ways. So originally there was this 140 character limit that has since been expanded. But again, it is a way to communicate succinctly. At least that's the idea behind it. Then there's Instagram, which its original intention was to share photos and video. And of course, features have expanded there as well. And as much, it is a very social network. And then there's Snapchat. And the distinctive there was that what you shared, first of all, it was much more directed, whereas Facebook, the whole world can see, Snapchat was much more directed towards those that you wanted to see what you posted, what you shared. But the distinctive there is that it disappears, and that after it is seen, it goes away. It doesn't have the same permanency as some of these others. Now, if you are primarily a Facebook and or Twitter user, that means that you're old. Okay. Now, you might not have realized that. You might have thought you were hip and savvy, but you're actually not. All of the young, cool kids use Instagram and Snapchat. Now, I have a Facebook and Twitter account. I don't have an Instagram and Snapchat account, so I'm old with you. But that's generally how it works. Regardless, though, we use these platforms in an effort to connect with people, and we use them quite a bit. So those of us that are Facebook users, on average, we use it almost an hour a day. And that's quite a bit of time we spend using this tool to try to connect with other people socially. And of course, a lot of us use multiple platforms here. We spend a lot of time in these tools trying to connect. The problem, though, is that we come across charts like this. Now, this chart's loneliness over the years and the decades. This is among young people primarily. But you'll see in the early 90s, we were actually pretty lonely back then. Those of us that were teenagers around then, you remember we were all cynical and angsty, and we were kind of lonely. That tapered off over the 90s. You know, maybe we vented through our grunge, and so that tapered and leveled off into the late 90s and kind of held steady for a while until about 2011, 2012, and then it ramped up, and it's continued to ramp up. So in the last 7-8 years, we have been an extremely, extremely lonely people. And it seems pretty clear that coincided with the smartphone age. And it's just sort of interesting that in our world that gives us so many opportunities for connection, that we feel so isolated and so lonely. And it's not just theoretical, it's not just out there. Of course, a lot of us have lived this, and we feel it in a very personal way. And we have to ask ourselves, why? You know, what is going on here? If we have so many opportunities to connect, and we have these amazing tools, what's happening? Why are we so lonely? In so many ways. That's what we want to ask this morning. And this morning, we're really going to take a pretty critical look at some of these tools. Now, I have a Facebook account, I have a Twitter account. I honestly don't use them a lot, but I do, and I'm not planning on deleting them. So I'm not anti-social media here. But I do believe that we need to take a very honest, very critical look at some of the tools we use and how we use them. And I've just felt compelled as I've considered it and read and talked to a lot of people. I feel like we have used these tools in a way that contributes to our loneliness, to our disconnection. And we need to examine that and expose some of the weaknesses here. Expose some of the ways that we do become disconnected through these tools that are intended to connect. And once we ask those questions and once we become aware, then I think we can use them appropriately for good. And so that's the hope. And so here's how we're going to do it. I'm just going to take this one verse, Colossians 3:12, and take a look at it through this filter of how we use technology. Now, this is in of course, the book of Colossians, Paul's letter to the Colossian church. Think about Paul's letters typically. What he typically does in the first part of his letter, he shares a lot of theology. He talks about God and about the gospel and God's love for us, and then calls us to return that love to God. And in the second part of his letter, typically, he gives some more practical instruction for the church, and specifically talks about loving each other, how we are to love in the church. Well, this is in that section, the beginning of that section, where he is talking about how we love each other in the church. And he says very simply here in Colossians 3:12, put on then, as God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, compassionate hearts, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience. She just lists a few qualities that we are to express that are necessary for relationship, necessary to love each other. And what I'm just going to do this morning is take a look at each of these five and ask how are they threatened in the ways in which, by the ways in which we use our media, our technology today. Because again, we just need to be aware of these things so we can get back in the driver's seat and not be enslaved. So let's start with compassionate hearts. Obviously, to love each other, we need to cultivate compassion. Compassionate hearts. And there are just a couple thoughts that I want to share here on how our ability to be compassionate, to be empathetic, can be threatened here through our media. First of all, divided attention reduces our ability to empathize. This seems pretty clear and obvious when we think about it. Let me share a quote from Sherry Turkle. She's a professor at MIT, and she has researched and written extensively about the effects of technology on our world today, and she has several books. This is what she says. What phones do to in-person conversation is a problem. Studies show that the mere presence of a phone on the table, even a phone turned off, changes what people talk about. If we think we might be interrupted, we keep conversations light on topics of little controversy or consequence. And conversations with phones on the landscape block empathic connection. If two people are speaking and there's a phone on a nearby desk, each feels less connected to the other than when there is no phone present. Even a silent phone disconnects us. It's a little convicting, isn't it? Okay, even if you're talking with just a phone sitting out there and it's not even doing anything, silent. It has the tendency to disconnect us, to lower our empathic connection, and it hinders relationship. Of course, much more when the phone's actually active and we're paying attention to it. And so quite obviously, these tools can get in the way of just connecting with the person right in front of us. Secondly, an inundation of information may hinder our ability to connect emotionally as we should. We've been living in this age of information actually for quite a while, probably the last 150 years at least, maybe with the advent of the telegraph. When the telegraph came along, all of a sudden we could get information nearly real time from far away, and it began to flood in, and we could hear about what was going on in far off places, and we could hear a lot of information. The problem was we couldn't really do much about it. And there wasn't a response that could come about based off that information that we received. Of course, over the course of the 20th century, this really, really ramped up. And pretty soon we were watching the nightly news each day, and we were seeing a dozen stories in minute, two-minute segments. They're pretty intense. And we hear some pretty awful things, and yet they come, bam, 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 rapid fire in 60 seconds, 3 minutes. And we have all of this information, these really serious events are coming into our world, and we just don't have the capacity to really process them and really connect emotionally. Now, of course, in our day-to-day, it's even more so, and now it's on a much more personal level. So I go to my Facebook feed, my news feed, and I again see a dozen big life events as I scroll down. Events that should elicit some kind of pretty significant emotional response out of me. And they don't. I think they can't. I can't respond emotionally as I should, because there's just too much of it. As I scroll through all of these weighty, weighty life events. And so as our attention is divided, and as we just get bombarded with all this information, even very personal information, it is just hard for us as human beings to really react as we should, with empathy, to engage our hearts compassionately. And I just wonder if we're dulling our ability to truly empathize, and empathy is a really important characteristic, quality to have in relationship. But are we struggling with our ability to empathize? So our compassion is challenged in different ways. Let's look at kindness. Okay, of course we want to be kind to each other. That's pretty necessary for a relationship, I think. Let's think about that. And in what ways do our digital media challenge our ability to be kind? In what ways do they even cultivate unkindness? You know, I could say there are three levels of unkindness we could talk about. First of all, there's just hostility, where we're actually mean to each other. We attack. Secondly, it's not an outright attack, but there's just a general rudeness, a lacking of courtesy. And then thirdly, where we just neglect to initiate. You know, we're not necessarily rude, we don't attack, but when there are opportunities for kindness that come up, we just don't take them. Okay, so these are some levels of unkindness. Let's think about each. First of all, hostility. We understand, I think we're all well aware, that we live in a pretty hostile, very divided world. And it's become increasingly so in recent years. And there is a pretty extreme polarization in our country right now. Now, of course, there are some issues that we divide around, that we disagree about. But it also seems pretty clear that in recent years, this division and this hostility has really been exacerbated via our media. And it sort of makes sense. You know, we live in this digital world. The internet is this remarkable thing where everybody has a platform. You know, we all have a voice. We can find that platform somehow on the internet. But when everybody has a voice, you have to shout pretty loud to be heard. And what bubbles to the top typically are the most provocative voices, the most snarky. You know, we live in a pretty snarky world. And when we look around our online world, we see a lot of snarkiness. We see a lot of hostility and a lot of division. And it's pretty easy to get immersed in that. And we go online and we consume this, and sometimes we contribute to it. And we just build this hostile spirit. We get angry out there. And when we're communicating online, we lose inhibition. And a lot of us have said things online that we would never say face-to-face. Because when you're face-to-face with a person, you see the reactions and you see that they're actually a person. And you're more guarded in what you say. But online, it is very easy just to be hostile. Proverbs 18:2, a fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing his opinion. And that probably characterizes our digital age in a lot of ways today. Let's think about rudeness, though, just general rudeness. And this is probably the one that hits home a lot more, because most of us are honestly guilty of this, that we are so easily distracted, and it's so easy to ignore in some way those people that are right around us. I'll give you a quote from a middle school teacher, actually from this church, that shared this with me. He said, lunch duty has changed when he's describing just lunch in his school. It used to be a wild and loud time, and kids would eventually run outside to play. Now it is pretty calm, and only a few head outside. Much of the time, kids eat relatively silently while they stare at a screen playing some game. Not 100%, not even necessarily a majority, but certainly a bunch do this. And after school, I see a bunch of kids hanging out, staring at their laptops and playing games, right next to other kids doing the same thing. He's describing this change in the atmosphere in his school in really just the last few years, where there are a lot of kids that are just not connecting with, are not interacting with those that are right beside him. Now, this is not just a problem for middle schoolers, though. This is a problem for all of us. Let me share something else from a 36-year-old manager of a company, and he's going to describe meetings in his workplace. This is what you do in a meeting. You come in, get some coffee, work on your laptop, listen for your name to be called, make your contribution, and then go back to your computer. A good meeting leader will give you a heads-up signal about 5 minutes before she calls on you so that you can close out your email and get ready to speak. Maybe you've experienced that in the workplace, and you go into a meeting, but you've got stuff to do because you're important. I've definitely been guilty of this. And so you do what you need to do, and you check your email, and you send your email until it's your turn, and then you talk, but you are ignoring the people, for the most part, that are talking. And this has become the norm. It's the norm in the workplace. It's the norm in schools. It's the norm in just basic social situations. And it's become somewhat acceptable. This is just how things work. But I don't think it should work that way. And I think this is rude. I think it's rude to ignore people or at least be distracted by our devices and not give people that are right with us, not give them our attention. And it's not love. You know, 1 Corinthians 13, love is not rude. And I think we really need to be, I think we can be different here. I think we can give each other our full attention when we're with each other, and it's really important to do so. And then there's just the neglect of proactive kindness, another level of unkindness, where we just don't take the steps that we need to. Now, I do believe that we have, through our social media, we have opportunities to express kindness to people. We can comment, we can like in ways that really do bring blessing to others. And that can be a good thing. Okay, so we don't want to downplay this too much. Here's the question I have, or the problem that I see. I think so often we do like or we comment and we express that kindness, and then we think that's enough. We basically checked that box. We've completed our act of kindness. But I think the kindness that we can show virtually is limited. Okay, it can only go so far. It can be a good first step, but it's pretty limited. And I think we need to make sure that if we're expressing kindness, we go all the way. And we don't stop at just a like or comment. So as we're pursuing kindness, we have to be aware of these things. That sometimes we can get in that online world and it changes us and probably brings out just an unkindness in us. Okay, we're going to take the next two together, humility and meekness, because they're pretty similar. They're not identical, but for the sake of really time here, we're going to take them together because they are so similar. And so let's think about humility and meekness and share a few thoughts on how our humility can be challenged in our digital world. First, our relational capacities are limited, but we feel compelled to constantly grow our social footprint. First week, I talked some about humility and how our technologies can push on our limitations, can convince us that we're not finite like we really are. I think this is an example of how that can happen. We do have limited relational capacities. I heard one study that said we can have about 6 good friends. That's what one study said. Others would give different numbers, but in reality, it seems like we can have a pretty limited number of close and deep connections. Of course, Jesus demonstrated this. In Mark 3:14, he appointed 12 that they might be with him. And he limited his circle. I think he did that in large part to give us an example and to remind us that we are limited. But of course, in our digital world, we want to extend that social footprint and have our thousands of followers or friends. And we can be tricked into thinking that those relationships have depth and really bring a lot of meaning to us. But it's so easy to get spread a mile wide and an inch deep. And I think we just need to remember we are limited in our relational capacity. Secondly, we often use technology to hide insecurities and vulnerabilities. Of course, we're all guilty of this as well. You know, when you're in an awkward social situation, and so you turn to your device, because it's just easier. It's hard to talk to people sometimes. And so why don't I avoid it? But of course there are issues here. I think oftentimes it is hard to talk to people, but it's good. And there's so much growth and maturity that occurs when we actually take those steps that we often don't want to take. And worlds of relationship are opened up when we take those steps that we don't want to take. But I think it's just easy to protect ourselves from things that are hard, to hide behind our technology when it comes to our insecurities, instead of offering those to God, pushing through them, taking those steps, and letting him grow and mature us. Thirdly, of course, is the big one. We are tempted online to boast and to broadcast. And we do this very subtly sometimes. A lot of the time we do it very subtly. But it can still be boastful. We can express this self-seeking arrogance online. One woman said this: "I spend my time online wanting to be seen as witty, intelligent, involved, and having the right ironic distance from everything. You get lost in your performance on Twitter, on Facebook. I'm geared towards showing my best self, showing me to be invulnerable or with as little vulnerability as possible." And we can probably relate to this. It is very easy just to cultivate image online, and we get lost in that. We get lost in our performance, wondering what kind of responses we're going to get. This is a famous picture, 2015. This is at a movie premiere. And so the stars of the show are walking down the red carpet. This woman became a little bit of a sensation. She's the one person in this picture that seems to be just in the moment. And she's got this kind of contented little smile on her face, and she's just soaking it in. Every other person, of course, is recording it. Now, I was just in Asia last week, and I took a bunch of pictures. And I took those pictures because I was excited to show my wife and my kids and friends what I experienced. And it was going to be a connecting experience when I showed them those photos. They were going to be able to get a glimpse into what I had experienced on this trip. And so obviously taking pictures and videos and showing them to other people is not a bad thing and can be a very connecting thing. And yet, isn't it so easy to cross a line there? So easy to cross a line where we are most concerned about building our celebrity and showing people what we have done and what we've experienced, and eager for those responses and that validation. It's just really easy to cross that line. And I don't know if you have crossed that line. Nobody can tell us, really. But it is worth having a conversation with God about this and really wrestling through and examining your motivations with some honesty. Okay, God, why do I feel so compelled to record and to post? And is there something there that I really need to consider? And are we missing out on just experiencing the moment where we're not looking, like in this picture, not looking at the actual event here, we're looking at our phone that kind of mediates the event for us? Can we actually experience the moment, or are we more concerned about future expression of the moment? And so it's just something for us to really consider. Finally, there's patience. And I think this is an important one. Patience is very necessary for relationship. It's necessary for relationship with God. It's very necessary for relationship with others. How is patience challenged? Well, we could consider a couple of our main social media platforms. They start with Insta and Snap. And that might tell us something, that they are about immediacy. And we live in this world that is all about immediacy. And we want to have things right away, and we get extremely impatient when we don't. Let me give you a few other examples of how our impatience, I think, is exposed and cultivated in this digital world. Texting and driving. Okay, that's kind of an easy one. And most of us, again, are probably guilty of this. But we feel like I don't have the time to actually wait until my journey is over or pull to the side of the road. But instead, I take my life and others' lives into my hands and text because I must right away. I must respond right away. Okay, so we are just simply impatient here. Another example, just the craving of immediate approval. We post, we express things online, but you've all felt it where you get all tied up inside and I need a response. And I need that immediacy again, and I want that approval, and I don't want it tomorrow, I want it now. And again, you can sense this impatience welling up in you. Or this obligating of each other to respond quickly. Don't we do this as well? Where if we send something, again, we need it right away. We need somebody to respond immediately. And we feel the need to respond immediately. That if we get a text, if we feel that buzz in our pocket, well, I've got to address it. We really need to grant each other the freedom to not respond right away, to not create this obligation. You know, I shared this chart earlier, charting loneliness and how it's really ramped up in recent years. But what's interesting is that it didn't really start ramping up when we all got our social media. It really started ramping up when we all got our smartphones, when we had social media available all the time, where it went with us wherever we went, where we always had access to it. That's what really seemed to trigger these things. And I think in large part it's because it creates just that simple impatience in us. Got to respond. I got to do it. I got to check it. I can't let this go. I can't set this aside for a moment. I've got to be engaged. It's just a simple impatience. So these are some of the ways that we are challenged by our digital world in these qualities that are really critical in our love for each other. So we might ask next, well, what might we do? We're going to get into a lot of practicals, next steps on week 5, but I want to offer just a few things right now. So here are just some practical next steps. Number one, be willing to quit. Now, this isn't the only solution. This might not be even a solution that many of us walk into, but I just want to throw it out just to put it on the table. And again, we're going to talk about it more week 5. But I think we feel like many of these tools are so vital for life that we can't even imagine setting it aside. even for a season. And I want to challenge you to consider it. Consider it. And I would say especially if as you use some of these tools, you notice certain responses in you. Does anger, anxiety, fear come about? Judgmentalism? You know, I think I realized about myself how easy it is when I scroll through my Facebook feed to judge. To judge the posts of other people. You know, does that come about? Maybe it's not just specifically through social media. Maybe it's through the different forms of media, even news media, that you consume. Do you consume certain channels of media, and afterwards it just produces this irritation and anger in you? Maybe you just want to set it aside. Again, maybe even just for a season. But I think that should be a possibility that's on the table. But secondly, aim deep instead of wide. When it comes to relationship, we want to aim deep instead of wide. As I mentioned earlier, our relational capacities are limited, and we should understand that. And so if I'm using these tools, I want to use them to cultivate depth of relationship, not breadth of relationship. And so can we have that in mind? Can that be a filter we send these tools through? Is it helping me go deep with people, or is it just broadening my superficial relationships? That could be a filter. Here's a big one. Pursue face-to-face interaction. Okay, let's use our tools as a first step towards face-to-face interaction, because face-to-face interaction is really important. Let me make a few points on that. In 2 John, John closes his letter like this. He does this in 3 John as well. He says, "Though I have much to write to you, I would rather not use paper and ink. Instead, I hope to come to you and talk face-to-face so that our joy may be complete." So he said, I'm not going to fully use my technology, the technology of the day. I'm going to use it to make a connection with you, but then I really want to pursue face-to-face interaction with you. And I think there are so many benefits to face-to-face interaction. For one, it reduces misunderstandings. We learn so much as we see somebody and pick up all the nonverbal cues that they are communicating. I'm going to share a few more quotes. One CEO of a large company, he said this: at least once a day, someone is in my office complaining about email exchanges with a fellow employee. And sometimes the person they are complaining about has also come in to complain. My message is always the same: get together, have a conversation. It reduces misunderstandings when we actually have face-to-face conversations. It also connects us emotionally. Again, like I was describing earlier, when we're together with something, it truly does connect us. Again, Sherry Turkle, I'll share a couple more quotes from her. She says, people require eye contact for emotional stability and social fluency. A lack of eye contact is associated with depression, isolation, and the development of antisocial traits such as exhibiting callousness. And the more we develop these psychological problems, the more we shy away from eye contact. Our slogan can be, if a tool gets in the way of our looking at each other, we should use it only when necessary. It shouldn't be the first thing we turn to. And then thirdly, this is the surprising one, maybe the counterintuitive one, but it actually does increase efficiency when we actually get together and talk with each other. Again, a quote from Sherry Turkle. She's describing the research done by one of her colleagues, and she says, Weber quantified the previously unquantifiable, and his results were stunning. To sum up a large number of studies, face-to-face conversation leads to higher productivity and is also associated with reduced stress. Call centers are more productive when people take breaks together. Software teams produce programs with fewer bugs when they talk more. And Weber studies had disappointing news for those who equate email and talk. The conversation effect doesn't work the same way for online encounters. What matters is being face-to-face. We need to see each other. We need to actually interact in physical proximity with each other. And so may we pursue that. May we take intentional steps to actually be together. Our fourth and final practical is to consider the goal of leading others to worship. You know, we can go back to our passage that our worship is meant to be a collective thing, but we are to lead each other into it. Remember, we address one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. This is to be much of our interaction, our conversation, our communication, to address each other with psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. So this is another filter I can take a lot of my online communication through. Is this facilitating leading other people into worship? Because that's our goal. And that's what we're really going to get into next week and the following week. Really, these first 3 weeks are our setup. They're introduction. They're identifying a lot of the issues. They're demonstrating the need. But what we're going to get to in the following 2 weeks is the goal of praise, of worshiping God. That's what we're all about. That's what we were designed for. It comes through each other. We help each other in our praise. But that's our ultimate goal, is to worship God. So does your online communication facilitate that in other people and in yourself? Are you worshiping God together? Ben, you can go ahead and come on up. We're going to sing one last song. But this is the goal again. We want to worship God, but we understand that our relationships are not independent from our worship. And we need to cultivate them. We live in a lonely world. We struggle with this. We struggle with isolation. And in large part, I would say, that loneliness has been oftentimes produced and then exacerbated through our media choices. And we need to make sure we take our media choices through certain filters so that we can connect and then, of course, connect to God. So let's sing.